The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before.
This great nation will endure as it has endured. Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth.
You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
We're not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
From every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring.
As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it, now or ever. We are Americans.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
Yes, indeed. Buckle up, my friends. Let's get up and get after it on this free-for-all Friday morning on AM 1420, The Answer. Yes, indeed. We have got a very, very big show for you this morning. Mr. Scream, what are you, sleeping? Wake up. There you go. Poke that guy in the ribs a couple of times over there. Mrs. Scream, you okay? It's Friday, a free-for-all Friday, and thank goodness, because we have too many important things to discuss to limit it to one or two topics. I'm counting on you, particularly in hour number one. I'm counting on you to be up and at it and get your calls going and get your thoughts on what topics that you want to talk about this morning. I do have guests coming up in the second hour and a little bit in the third hour. But in the first hour in particular, this is your opportunity, and I need you to step up. I just do. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Like I said, there are too many things to limit it. Sometimes I need you to drive it. You decide what direction we go. I've got immigration stories to beat the band. I've got, obviously, the latest on the speaker's race in D.C. I've got the latest on the speaker's coup in, or speaker's steal, if you will, in Columbus. We've got the big meeting this morning at 9 o'clock. It started just a few minutes ago. To my understanding, the state central committee is they choose a new Ohio Republican Party chair. We got big news from last night on that front. The presumed front runner to win that spot has withdrawn his name from consideration. We're all over the place. I mean, seriously, we have so many things that we have to talk about. And I welcome your thoughts. 216-901-0945. It's the sixth morning of the first month of the year of our Lord 2023, making it the 2-year anniversary of the riot at Capitol Hill. The riot at the U.S. Capitol. And, of course, I've got thoughts on that as well. Not as much on what happened that day, because we know what happened that day. Despite the best efforts of the Unselect Committee put together to specifically blame Donald Trump for inciting what they call an insurrection, despite all of their lies, despite all of their cherry-picked information and out-of-context videos and biased witnesses appearing before the January 6th Unselect Committee. Despite all of that, we know the truth. We know what happened that day. We know there are answers that have never been given to some very, very important questions. And we're not going to let them get away with it. On the second anniversary, we will condemn, like I did on the first anniversary, on the day of and the day after. I'll condemn violent acts. I'll condemn anybody who broke a window. I'll condemn anybody who smashed anything. I'll condemn anybody who stole anything. And I'll demand that they be held accountable by the letter of the law, as I do for everybody who breaks, smashes, and steals, and assaults in any other riot that we have seen around the country. I will absolutely do that again today on the second anniversary. What I will not do, however, is rubber stamp, green light, and approve the robbing of these individuals who have been accused of those things, who according to the law are still considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, who have been held for 2 years without being given a chance to prove their innocence or without the government doing their duty and proving them guilty. Remember, it is the job of a prosecutor in a court of law to prove beyond a reasonable doubt any individual suspect or anybody who is charged, any defendant. It's their job to prove that they're guilty, and they're not being given an opportunity to do that. So on the second anniversary of January 6th, I'm less concerned with the riot, which we have already covered from stem to stern. I am more concerned with the aftermath and the robbing of the constitutional rights to a speedy trial, to face their accusers in open court, to be held or not held, and to be granted bail and an opportunity to go free while they await their long-held-off trials. What is being done to the people who have been held, including many who are absolutely nonviolent and had nothing to do with breaking of any law other than trespassing, those individuals being held at this point in time is unconscionable, unconstitutional, and unconscionable. So we're going to focus a little bit on that today, too. So we're all over the place, like I said. Coming up on the program, we've got a couple of guests. At 10:10 this morning, we're going to be talking with... is it going to be Larry Klayman first, or is it going to be Kenny Hsu? I see Kenny Hsu is with us first. Kenny Hsu is going to be joining us first as we talk about another story of racial and ethnic favoritism. Kenny Hsu is amazing. Kenny Hsu is going to talk to us about the story that we brought up with Peter Kersenow last week, the Thomas Jefferson School of Science and Technology, one of the most decorated and well-regarded schools in America. Turned out a whole bunch of National Merit Scholars, and they wouldn't tell them. Why? Equity. Because not everybody got a National Merit Scholarship, so they didn't tell them they got it, and which means they couldn't put it on their resumes, their applications to colleges, use it for scholarships, and so forth. It was a criminal act. Criminal act. And Kenny Hsu, who is all over racial and ethnic privilege, if you will, and denial of opportunity when it comes to admissions and affirmative action. He's going to join us to talk about that. That'll be coming up at 10:10 this morning. Then at 10:35, Christina Hagan, former Ohio State rep. She is going to have lots of thoughts on the state house right now in Ohio and what happened with the speaker steal that has resulted in Jason Stevens being the Speaker of the House for the Ohio State House. So that'll be at 10:35. And at 11:10, Larry Klayman is going to join us. Talk about a whole host of things, not the least of which is the Trump tax return story from about a week and a half ago that turned out to be a great big nothing burger. But what that means going forward, if they can do that to a former president, who can they not? Is anybody safe to have their private records exposed to the public, especially in hateful, negative press circumstances, I suppose. I guess the point being, this is what the Washington Post wanted. This is what CNN wanted. This is what the New York Times wanted, so that they could spin anything that they could find against Donald Trump in his tax returns in a negative way, even if he broke no laws. What does that mean for everybody else then? So Kenny Hsu, Christina Hagan, and Larry Klayman are going to join me for sure. There's a chance that Shannon Burns will join me from the State Central Committee meeting. They are meeting right now, as I understand it. They're scheduled, Shannon told me yesterday, to vote on the chairmanship at about 10 o'clock. And I asked him if he would call as soon as it was over. And he said he would absolutely do that, or during a break that they might have. And we'll get an update the very best we can on what's going on there. So did I mention we're packed today, not just with guests, but with topics and issues? And I want you to decide what direction we go. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Let's start, as we always like to do, with our Pledge of Allegiance. Patriots, please stand and rise. Face your flag if you have one nearby. If you don't, work on that. Put your hand on your heart in any event and join us for our Pledge of Allegiance. If you are a believer in what Joe Biden just said yesterday, as he makes his plans to go for the very first time in his 80 years of life, for the first time ever, he's been in government office for 50 of those years, go down for the first time to the southern border between the United States and Mexico to see the results of his work to completely destroy the border and erase our national sovereignty. And he spent all day yesterday telling everybody it's the Republicans' fault. If you buy anything you get from that grifter, then you don't have any respect whatsoever for the flag I'm asking you to pledge your allegiance to. You are therefore exempt from that request. You may take a knee instead, where you're more comfortable, next to your favorite ex-quarterback. For the rest of us, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gonna jump in on that story first, not the speaker story with Kevin McCarthy. Nope, we've been doing that for three straight days. Gonna jump in on Biden's border visit coming up right after this. Always Right Radio, AM 1420. The answer. All right, it's 9:21. Thanks for being with us on this Free for All Friday on Always Right Radio, AM 1420. The answer. So, Joe Biden has laid out a new plan to reduce the number of recorded illegal crossings at the U.S.-Mexico border, which have reached all-time highs during his first 2 years in the administration. All-time highs. And despite that very easily provable statistical fact, he says that the border has been closed. His Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, says the border has been closed. He says that this has not been a crisis or an emergency. He says that what problems we do have are the fault of the Republicans. The Republicans who have been screaming to build the wall, who have been screaming to increase the number of deportations, to increase the number of border security agents to stop this, who have been doing everything they can to protect the people of this country and, more specifically, the residents and citizens of the border cities and states that are most affected by this. Republicans have been doing everything they can. Republicans, under Donald Trump's leadership, literally turned things around for 4 years. And we had the biggest decrease in illegal border crossings when President Trump was in office that we have had in decades, from 1 year to the next. All Joe Biden had to do was sit down and do nothing and say, keep it up. Keep it up. Keep the Remain in Mexico policy. Keep the border wall construction going. Keep it up. But that's not what they wanted to do. That's not what he wanted to do. So I want to share a little bit about what we heard yesterday. Joe Biden literally took to the podium in a speech yesterday and declared that Republicans are to blame for the border crisis, if there is a border crisis. Now, by the way, he says now that the reason he is going down and the reason he hasn't gone down to the border, I should say, since he's been president, the reason he hasn't gone down is because there are more important things to do. Remember that when he went to Arizona about 3 weeks ago? He went to Arizona to make a photo op for a photo op with because of a chip manufacturer, which is fine. And while he's there, people said, that's a border state. Will you go down to the border while you're in there, while you're in the state? Nope. Why not? There's more important things to do. Now he says it's really, really important, but he hasn't gone down because Republicans haven't taken it seriously. This is what you get when you have a dementia-addled, far-left puppet on the strings of globalists who do not want the United States to remain sovereign. This is what you get when you have Joe Biden. Hold on one second.
That now is finally the right time to visit the southern border. Republicans have been calling on you to do this since the beginning.
Because Republicans haven't been serious about this at all. Come on. They haven't been serious about this at all. I wanted to make sure that I knew what the outcome, at least the near outcome, was on Title 42 before I went down.
Why? Why? What difference does that make? With Title 42 in place, we have been overrun. If Title 42 is lifted, we will be overrun. Why?
We don't have that yet, so I had to operate. I don't like Title 42. But it's the law now. I have to operate within it. It's, my prediction is, nothing particularly insightful about this, Title 42 is going to go away before the end of the year in terms of the Supreme Court, my prediction. And then we're going to have to use Title 9, Title 8. 8, right? Am I right? Yeah, Title 8. 8, 9. And, which
this is what you get when you have Joe Biden.
Which we can implement what we're doing here plus some other things.
What do you mean? Implement what? Implement what that you're doing here? You decrepit old globalist. What? You're not doing anything here. That's why we had over 5 million illegal crossings that we know about in your first 2 years. And that's just in your first two fiscal years. That was as of October. Since October, another 250,000. What do you mean we're gonna continue to add on to what we're doing here? You're doing nothing. And that doesn't even count hundreds of thousands of gotaways who are the most dangerous of the most dangerous illegal crossers. Because if they're not turning themselves in and saying asylum, that means they can't turn themselves in because they're transporting something illegal. Or they're on terrorist watch lists. Or they're known gang members. The gotaways are the ones that we cannot even account for. But you're telling us that we're doing a good job and we're going to build on that?
But so I wanted to make sure there was a rational way in which we could begin to announce it. But I couldn't wait once the Supreme Court ruled that they're not going to make the final decision on Title 42 for some time, for another, who knows, probably not till June, in that range. Oh, I don't know.
You don't know anything. What you do know is that the Republican Party is responsible for the most secure border and the biggest drop in illegal crossings during the 4 years that the Republican Party's president, Donald Trump, was in office. All you had to do was take over, sit down, and say, keep going. Instead, what did you do? You lifted all of the measures that were put in place by President Donald Trump, and you opened the spigot. And out of that spigot has flowed over the course of the last 2 years record numbers of illegal aliens. Many of them, Lord knows how many of them, violent, dangerous threats to people in the United States. That's the reality of it. And for those who are not violent threats in terms of crime, they are just simply a massive drain on the resources that we have in the United States. Massive drains. How do you know this? Because even people in your party, people like Eric Adams in New York City, people like Muriel Bowser, you have Democrat mayors and Democrat governors screaming, quit sending these people to us without sending us hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to help provide resources for them. If they're giving that much money and resources to the illegal aliens, you know what they are not giving that money to? They're not giving that money to American citizens who need those resources. Impoverished, maybe homeless, maybe sick. All of the things that the illegal aliens come over here needing resources for, we have millions of Americans. We have homeless veterans who aren't getting the type of... How come Eric Adams has not ever asked Joe Biden to send him $1 billion to help provide for the poor and impoverished homeless veterans on the streets of New York City? Nope. But as soon as the illegal aliens come in, he says, we can't handle them unless you send us more billions of federal tax dollars. It is incomprehensible that Biden is going to make his first trip to the border on Sunday. The first trip in his 80 years of life, not to mention, of course, his 2 years as president of the United States. It is literally incomprehensible that this is the decision that has been made by the Biden administration. Former acting U.S. Attorney General Matt Whitaker had this to say.
It's clear that immigration is a political issue that extreme Republicans are always going to run on. But we need more resources to secure the border. Yet again, extreme Republicans have said no. The Republicans haven't been serious about this at all.
Mayorkas said.
Sorry, so obviously there's Biden with what he said, a little recap there, and now the question before Mr. Whitaker.
This a couple of days ago, he blamed the Republicans. Now the president is blaming Republicans. So how can they sit up there with a straight face when the Republicans have been begging he and Kamala Harris and really anybody from the administration to get down there and help?
Yeah, this is all political spin. You know, this border has been under assault ever since Joe Biden took office. He has let it deteriorate to a unsustainable level right now. He's re-implementing Trump-era policies to try to at least get this off of the TV because it is politically hurting him. That's the only reason he's coming out. I don't trust him on these issues because I don't think his heart is in it. He does not want to secure the border, and he just wants the images that we're seeing right now on the TV to be off the TV, and so he's taking this to an online app that a lot of these folks that are coming here can use in order to move this crisis away from the border and mostly to our airports when these people arrive.
Exactly what I asked Jim Jordan yesterday. When I had Jim Jordan on the air and I mentioned Biden's border visit for the first time, I said, do you think he'll get an actual look at what's going on there, or will they whitewash the border for him so the press pool that's following has nothing to report? And I think Matt Whitaker, former acting U.S. Attorney General, just laid it out. They are going to whitewash the area that he visits in El Paso. They're going to make it look completely clear, like there's no crush of people coming across it, like there's not 5,000 people a day coming across. They're going to clear it. They're going to take all these people to other areas, airports and so forth, and then lie and continue to lie to the American people. This is enormous, and I hope people haven't lost sight of it because we're all watching the Kevin McCarthy debacle on Capitol Hill. We'll get a newscast. Then we'll come back. I want to hear your phone calls. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110 on AM 1420 The Answer.
Enlightening the sleeping masses and stoking the fire of the American dream. Always Right Radio with Bob France on The Answer.
That last little promo there by Sebastian Gorka. That is exactly what it is. It's not Biden that opened the border. It's the Republicans. The Republicans are responsible for this. They're not serious. And, oh, by the way, the border's not open anyway. Just ask the Secretary of Homeland Security.
Let me be clear. Title 42 or not, the border is not open.
5 million plus. 5 million plus. Illegal border crossings in less than 2 years under Joe Biden. 800,000-900,000, maybe over a million, but the last number I saw was between 800,000-900,000 gotaways, meaning individuals they couldn't catch and who didn't turn themselves in and declare asylum. They just had to get across because they had the reasons to get across without any detention whatsoever, without being inspected or anything else. They didn't want to just turn themselves in and be given a notice to appear before an immigration court for an asylum hearing. They had to get across without any obstruction. They're the most dangerous ones. But we're talking then roughly 6 million plus in 2 years that Joe Biden has been president of the United States, and his Homeland Security secretary continues to say,
let me be clear, Title 42 or not, the border is not open.
That's beyond gaslighting, Dr. Gorka. Sebastian Gorka said that is gas. That's beyond gaslighting. That is just assuming without cause that the American people who hear his voice, Mayorkas' and Biden's voices, are just flat out stupid. Beyond stupid, beyond cognitively impaired, beyond developmentally disabled, they just can't understand anything. That is beyond gaslighting. It is so much worse than that. All right. I've got so many other things I want to talk about now, and I want to go to the phones because I do have on the line now a patriot, a true patriot here in Northeast Ohio, works very, very hard as the president of the We the People Convention, also the Portage County Tea Party from when he started that way back in 2010. Tom Zabotowski maybe has some news for us on what's going on with the State Central Committee meeting this morning, and maybe some thoughts on what happened over the last few days at the state capitol and the speaker steal of 2023. Tom Z, good to hear from you, my friend. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Bob. Thanks for asking me to come on. This is a very important week for all patriots, you know, at the state level, at the federal level. This is serious stuff, so I'm glad we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, no question about it. Before we get into the political part of this and all of the elections that we're discussing, do you have any thoughts on Biden now for the first time in 2 years as president, for the first time in 10 years, because he spent 8 with Barack Obama, first time in 10 years that he's been serving in the White House, going down there and actually seeing the southern border on Sunday? Do you think he's going to get a real view of what is going on down there, or do you think they're going to clean the entire place out for his visit?
No, you know, as you just proved with the Mayorkas quote, they're going to go down there and put on a TV show. They're going to, you know, take him to a place where nobody's crossing, everything looks great. They're going to put people on, you know, with him and say, oh, things are terrific. Don't watch it. Folks, they're liars. They are professional liars. Nothing they say can be taken, you know, seriously. And here's a memo to Mayorkas and to Biden, the rest of them. There's this new thing out there called the internet. And when you lie, we can find out. Okay? And that's how stupid they are. They think that when they used to control Twitter and they used to control, you know, the other social media things, they could lie with impunity because, you know, it was so hard to find other, you know, voices. But guess what? Bob France has a radio show that lots of people listen to and get the truth. The We the People Convention has a podcast that thousands of people listen to every week. We're not stupid. They are. But worse, they're evil. And that's why we've got to defeat them.
Yeah, no question about it. Thank you for your thoughts on that, Tom. I wanted to get somebody else to kind of echo it so I didn't sound redundant. You broke some news this morning, actually, and I think we learned of this late last night, that there has been a dramatic turn of events in the fight for ORP chairmanship to replace Bob Poduchik. Do you want to tell us what you've learned and what do you think's going on right now at that State Central Committee meeting?
Yeah, and literally right now, you know, they're voting literally as you and I are speaking. And I want to shout out to your audience, because I know many of your audience get the emails and text messages that We the People Convention sends out. And for this week, you know, we've been letting them know that the same people, the Kasich DeWine Democrats who orchestrated the betrayal of our votes in the Ohio House on Tuesday, that their follow-up was going to be a takeover of the Ohio Republican Party on Friday morning. And the way they were going to do that is they had this guy, Jimmy Stewart, who's a lobbyist and a former representative, a state representative, that they were trying to install him as Bob, you know, the corrupt chairman now, Bob Poduchik's handpicked choice to continue what Poduchik did, which was to make sure conservatives couldn't run as Republicans in the primary and win and basically funnel Democrat money to candidates who say they're Republicans that will vote Democrat, of which we just saw on Tuesday where 22 did. So we were calling our 66 State Central Committee members, and because of the efforts of your listeners, they got the message, and it was clear last night that Jimmy Stewart could not win. And so the swamp pulled Jimmy Stewart and said, okay, you're going to withdraw, and we're going to throw all of our support behind Alex, and his last name is hard to pronounce, but it's like Tranafaluo from Hamilton County. He's the chairman of Hamilton County. And Alex is a, you know, he's not Jimmy Stewart, so we won that. And I want to thank your listeners for making those calls, because we got him thrown out. But now, this morning, we got a problem, because right now, Alex, the guy from Hamilton County, has 33 votes. Brian Williams, who we're supporting from Summit County, has 30. A candidate needs 34 votes to win. And there are three of the 66 state central committee members cannot attend the meeting today. So it's a stalemate. Something has to give. And I think, Bob, it comes down to a question that you and I are, you know, very much in favor of, and that is, Will the Ohio Republican Party State Central Committee sanction the 22 House members who voted with the 32 Democrats to give control of the Ohio House to the Democrats? Will they sanction? And right now, Alex, the guy from Hamilton County, who the Kasich-DeWine Democrats just put their support behind, has a problem. Because those people who orchestrated, you know, the betrayal on Tuesday in the House don't want those people sanctioned. But if the Ohio Republican Party doesn't sanction Republicans who voted with Democrats and gave the House away, not only will they look ridiculous, it'll be proof that the Ohio Republican Party condones the betrayal, Bob. And
well,
that they've
and
been
we need to point out. We need to point out also that, you know, in addition to supporting the Democrats and handing away essentially the choice of power in the Ohio State House to the Democrats, they also violated Republican rules. They made an agreement in the Republican caucus in November when they voted for Derek Marin. They made an agreement that whoever wins this vote, we will all support and vote unanimously for Speaker. That means 67-0 is what was supposed to happen. Well, Derek Marin won. It was a close vote. It was, I think, 35-32 or 34-31 or whatever the math is to make up 67.
Right.
And you know, so obviously not everybody was happy that he won, but he won. And they made the pledge before the vote. Whoever wins, we will all unanimously support. And now we know that they're just a bunch of freaking liars talking about the 22 who probably never thought in a million years Marin would have enough votes to win. They were going to have their establishment guy, whether it's Jason Stevens or some other rhino. There's no way that Marin was going to win. And that's why they said, oh, sure. Let's all agree to vote unanimously in favor of whoever wins our vote here in this caucus. Then Marin won and they said, oh my God, now what? And the answer is they surrendered their own credibility, integrity. And in my estimation, they ought to surrender their seats in Columbus.
I agree. And, Bob, now you're hitting on the most important point. Here's what's going on, folks. They have been doing this to us in the behind closed doors since Kasich came around, okay? They've been voting with the Democrats. They've been blocking the conservative agenda. But it was always out, you know, undercover. Now it's in your face. Now they just voted and said, oh, yeah, all you Ohio Republicans who voted a supermajority of 67 House Republicans in November, your votes don't count. We're going to caucus with the Democrats. And as the Democrats said when they voted on Tuesday, because Stevens will help us support our agenda. They literally said that.
Yeah,
okay,
that's exactly right. But yet, Tom, when we're talking to Tom Zawistowski, president of the We the People Convention. When I talked to Al Catrona and DJ Swearingen, two of the 22, yesterday and Wednesday, they both just swore up and down there was no deal, that nothing was promised to the Democrats. The Democrats just had to vote for somebody, so they chose who they chose, apparently on their own, and that they were given no indication that there would be any votes that might go their way or any legislation that may or may not be given a vote on the House floor by the new speaker. They were promised nothing. They just all decided, hey, we got to vote for somebody. And coincidentally, they all voted for the individual that the 22 defectors from the Republican Party wanted them to vote for.
Yeah, and Joe Biden's going to go to the border and there'll be thousands of illegals crossing right in front of him. And he's going to say, what a disaster. They're liars. You called it. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I know that sounds harsh to you, and you know, Bob and I, you know, have talked about this. We have no love for the Republican Party at any level. We've both said we're looking for some other option, because this is what's going on here in Ohio is what's playing out in D.C. That's what this fight is about, McCarthy. We cannot get different results if we keep doing the same thing. These people standing up against McCarthy are saying, listen, he's the guy who did this to us. He's the one that helped pass the omnibus disaster. He's the one that helped with this, the disrespect for marriage amendment. And if we don't start calling them out, fighting back, and defeating them, Bob, then we have no country. And right now, we're deciding in Columbus at the State Central Committee meeting whether there is actually a Republican Party or not. Because if they don't sanction these 22 people, and I agree with you, they should all lose their seats. They should all resign. And we're going to keep fighting until they're gone, because if they don't resign, we're going to recruit people to primary, all of them, in next year's primary, and we're going to defeat them. Because this cannot stand, Bob. It can't stand.
No, it cannot. And, you know, I made a comment the other day online and on air that I want a new party because I feel like I don't have one anymore. The Republican Party has always been, well, I don't say always, but generally speaking, in the last 10, 20 years, maybe it's always been the lesser of two evils. I want true conservatism. I don't get it from Democrats. I don't get it from Republicans. I want constitutionalism. I don't get it from rhinos who are just literally, people don't, you know, people use that phrase and they just kind of gloss over it. Rhino literally means Republican in name only. They're not truly Republican, they're Democrat, but they use the Republican name to get elected in areas where they know the Republican brand is going to be a little bit better received. So these people are frauds. They're all Democrats. If I can't find a home, leaders, representation in either one of those parties, then I need a new party. And there isn't one, Tom Zawisowski. So what's a homeless conservative refugee supposed to do if we can't look to the Republican Party anymore based on what we've just talked about?
Well, Bob, you know, based on what you're seeing this week, what your listeners are seeing, there may be a new party emerging, because it is very clear what you just said is true. Rhino is now right in front of you. They're not even hiding it anymore. They're literally saying, we're going to vote with the Democrats. We're going to, you voted for me. You think I'm a Republican? No, I'm not. So listen, we're not a red state. We're a rhino state. We are red can be as a population, but
right.
Everybody from DeWine through the state officers, through the House, through the Senate, now into the Republican Party, they're bought and paid for by Democrats. So we've got to find a new path. Now, what is that path? I think it's going to start at the local level. I think we're going to have to start to elect independents. I think we're going to have to start to elect people at the local level who are conservative, who maybe run as Democrats or Republicans, but they're actually going to act like conservatives. But somehow, we've got to change the whole dynamic of this, because, Bob, we just can't keep working for people who stab us in the face, in the heart, while they're looking in our eyes and laugh about it. That's
wow.
What Rob Portman did on the way out the door. He loved
he
the
did.
Fact that he could stick us. That's what Rob Portman did.
That's a really, really unique distinction there. You know, the metaphorical stabbing in the face and as opposed to in the back. Usually they, you know, they're very sly and they're very, very cowardly and they come up and get you in the back when you can't defend yourself. But now they literally are looking you in the face and saying, what are you going to do about it as they, you know, take our lives? And again, it's metaphorical, figurative. Don't want anybody freaking out about violent imagery. It is what it is. This is a metaphorical backstabbing or front stabbing, as you say. And the question is what are we going to do about it? Tom, before you go, so since they're voting now and they're deciding on who's going to lead the ORP, and they're also deciding on whether or not they're going to censure the 22 who violated the Republican pledge in the caucus vote for Derek Marin, do you have a prediction? Is it going to be who? Because you said it yourself. Something has to give in the stalemate. You know, four people need to flip, either from Alex Triantafillou to Brian Williams or vice versa. Do you have a prediction?
You know, Bob, I don't. I'm going to ask your listeners to say a prayer. Just say a prayer for those 63 citizens, fellow Republicans who are in Columbus right now, trying to decide, you know, to make the right decision. You know, you got to have some faith. You got to believe in God, you know, and then, you know, I want to make a clear statement. We did win by getting rid of Jimmy Stewart. Okay. Thank you for fighting. I want people to understand we do win. We don't always lose. Say a prayer, because I don't know. This is going to be a close call. And however it goes, Bob, is going to be a major thing for all of us. Because if the Ohio Republican Party is lost, the primaries next year in Ohio are going to be a joke. And people are going to have to start thinking about running as independents. Because if the swamp controls the primaries like they have for the last many elections in the Republican primary, we're not going to get anybody we want to run. This is what's at stake today.
It's and if we want to be forward thinking, it has direct ramifications on 2024 as well. Can we count on Ohio to be a reliable red state and elect the Republican nominee the way that they have, for the past several years? I don't know if we can.
Yeah.
If this is the lead of the Republican Party, the leadership of the Republican Party, both in Columbus from the state house perspective as well as the ORP, can we count on, if there's a Ron DeSantis or whoever, whether it's Donald Trump again, whoever wins the Republican nomination, can they count on Ohio as being guaranteed electoral votes? I don't think so, not with this type of leadership.
I agree with you, Bob. It's a lot at stake. This is a historic week. Let's hope we can persevere in the federal house, and let's hope we can persevere here with the Republican Party.
Tom, thanks for coming on and shining the light on this. We really needed your voice. I appreciate that very much. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for all you do, Bob. Appreciate it.
Tom Z joining us from the We the People Convention on AM 1420, The Answer. His voice is a very important one. So is yours. 216-901-0945. Right back.
One, two, three, four.
So I told you this story a little bit earlier this week and a little bit last week with Peter Kersenow. The administrators at Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, the highest rated high school in America, for 2 years they've been withholding notifications of National Merit Scholarship Awards from the school's families and the students who won them, most of them Asian, denying them the right to use those awards to boost their college admission prospects and earn scholarships. They denied them why? Equity. Because of equity. They didn't want students who didn't earn the awards to feel bad about the ones that did. So since not everybody can get an award, not everybody can get a trophy, nobody got their trophy. It's robbery. Kenny Hsu is going to join me next, right out of the top of the hour. The author of An Inconvenient Minority, The Attack on Asian American Excellence, and The Fight for Meritocracy. This isn't just about Asians or non-Asians. This is about the last word in that book. Meritocracy. Since when do we start punishing people for excelling? Kenny Hsu will join us, and we'll continue to with your phone calls as Free For All Friday continues on AM 1420 The Answer.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
Hour number two underway now, 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. We continue to await on this Free For All Friday, the sixth morning of the first month of the year of our Lord 2023. No, do not think that date is not lost on me. We will talk about the second anniversary since the phony insurrection, the real riot. Did do that, no question about it, but the phony insurrection. We will have some thoughts on that and, moreover, what has happened to the political prisoners who have now been held for 2 years without their constitutional right to a speedy trial being granted. We will talk about that. We're going to get back to, we await from word from Columbus on the State Central Committee, the Republican State Central Committee, and their vote for a new Ohio Republican Party chair. Shannon Burns has pledged to call as soon as he can after that vote. If we do have a new chair, we will bring that for you. And if they're going to have to go to a second or third or fourth vote, because as Tom Zawasowski explained, there may be a stalemate there, then we'll let you know that too. So we're waiting for news there. We're waiting for news from Capitol Hill as well in Washington, D.C., where Kevin McCarthy 11 times has come up short. Overnight, apparently a new framework for a potential deal to flip some of the holdouts to support McCarthy has been reached. Doesn't mean it's going to be done today. Maybe it'll be done over the weekend, maybe early next week, but it looks like they're getting closer and closer to getting something done there. We're waiting for that too. So while we wait for those news-breaking stories, let's talk about another story that I think is extraordinarily important. Peter Kersenow and I discussed this from the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights a little bit last week. I want to go now to somebody who's a bit of an expert on this subject, because we've talked about the affirmative action policies of schools like Harvard, North Carolina, and others that are, well, essentially biased and discriminating against Asians because Asians are performing too well when it comes to admissions and acceptance to various campuses. and they're blocking them in order to diversify and bring equity to freshman classes and college campuses. And, of course, I'm talking about Kenny Hsu, who wrote the book An Inconvenient Minority, The Attack on Asian American Excellence and the Fight for Meritocracy. Joining us now to talk about another development in this field. First of all, Kenny, thanks for the time. Happy New Year. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Always a pleasure to talk with you. You bring so much good insight to these very, very important stories about equality and equality of opportunity rather than equity of outcome. At Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, apparently they don't believe in that. They don't believe in equality of opportunity. They want everybody to have the same outcome. And if they don't have the same outcome, well, then we're not going to tell anybody that. Even if it costs kids who have earned national merit scholarships the opportunity to boost their college admission prospects and earn those scholarships. Kenny, what do you know about TJ, and how long has this been going on?
Yeah, and I'm going to get to TJ in a second, but first I wanted to address what you said about the Asians and what Asian achievement does to this country. It's a phenomenally good thing for this country. Actually, new research shows that even the white kids, when they are in more Asian districts like San Francisco and Montgomery County, Maryland, the white kids even do better. So a rising tide lifts all boats. Asian achievement is something that should be celebrated in this country. Instead, it's being denigrated. And Thomas Jefferson High School, which previously was, and I use the word previously intentionally, which previously was the number one math and science high school in the entire nation by basically any measure available. The math SAT scores, the percentage of people getting into those top universities, everything. Recently decided that the school was too Asian. Because it was about 70% Asian, and they revised their admissions policies to basically to discriminate against Asians for the purpose of admitting more blacks, but actually admitting more whites as well. The scores went down, and now they want to cover it up. And you know what they've done? They've decided that they want to rescind the merit-based awards that they've previously have been giving their top students, because they don't want the top students to know that they're the top students. They're enforcing a culture of mediocrity in Arlington, Virginia, where Thomas Jefferson is located. And, of course, this ideology of enforced mediocrity under the premise of diversity, equity, and inclusion is at the heart of what wokeness is in our country.
Kenny Hsu, first of all, to your first statement, I completely agree. I completely agree. Rising tide lifts all boats, and you know, success and achievement by some, I don't care who they are, what they are, is going to only drive others to succeed, to match. A competition is good. It's good in the workplace. It's good in business, and it's good in academia as well. So I completely concur. As it pertains to this, there's one element of this, of course, when we just talk about discrimination and fundamental fairness and the desire for, like I said, equity and everybody to have equal outcomes. But there's more than just the principle here. And there's more than just recognition and meritocracy for the very high achieving students who earn national merit scholarships and national merit awards. There's a financial aspect to this. I don't know if anybody's done the numbers, but there's got to be somebody who can put the numbers together and say how many students in 2 years were awarded national merit scholarships or given national merit awards that they could use to earn scholarships from the schools to which they apply. How many of them, or how much money, rather, are we talking about that they could have been denied had the administrators been allowed to continue doing this? We're talking about significant. I mean, everybody knows about the cost of college in America today and the rate of inflation for higher education compared to the regular rate of inflation for everything else. We're talking about significant dollars for maybe parents who don't have the money to pay for their kids to go to school. Kids earned their way, and now am I crazy in calling this robbery, Kenny Hsu? They're robbing these kids and their parents of dollars that they could use to go to college.
Right. You're not crazy. You're not crazy. Look, so if you're a talented child, but you're born into a family that doesn't have a lot of wealth, and a lot of Asian families in this country don't have a lot of wealth, right? They're immigrants. They come to this country with basically nothing, no social connections, nothing except their talent, right? You're immediately reliant upon the public education system to be able to basically to drive that talent forward and push it to its best point. And that's what schools like Thomas Jefferson are set up for. If you're rich, you can always send your kid to get private tutoring. You can go to, you know, a private school, Lawrenceville, Exeter, those kinds of places. But if you're not, like most of these people are, you're reliant upon Thomas Jefferson. And so by failing to maximize the potential of schools like this for high-achieving populations, these schools are doing not only these parents a great disservice, and yes, robbing these parents of their abilities to give a great opportunity for their kids, but also robbing the country. Because if you want to encourage excellence in this country, the next generation of scientists, nuclear engineers, rocket engineers, they're trained right here in Thomas Jefferson. They're trained in these schools. They're given that competitive effort, and you're ruining it. You're ruining our next generation of high math and science talent, and you're doing it all in the name of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah, it's really remarkable that they thought that they could get away with this, and that they thought they should get away with this, that they actually felt like, you know what, we're going to hurt some kids who earn something in order not to hurt the feelings of other kids, and to make them feel bad, especially, like you say, when the significant number of the awards were going to Asians. So I want to ask you a question about Asian, being Asian, and because I feel like there's an unintentional racism, and I don't even want to use the word racism because it's unintentional. But when people talk about Asian success, you talk about it in the title of your book, An Inconvenient Minority, The Attack on Asian American Excellence and the Fight for Meritocracy. You talk about how many Asians come to this country poor, and you're right. They've got nothing, and yet their talent allows them to achieve from the ground up. I mean, literally starting from ground zero into extraordinary heights that many other races or ethnicities cannot do. Can you speak to how and why that is, given that not all Asians are the same? And this is what I mean by the unintentional racism. Most people cannot distinguish, you know, that Chinese is not Japanese, and Japanese is not Vietnamese, and Vietnamese is not Korean, and Korean is not Malaysian, and Malaysian is not Filipino, and whatever. It just seems like we kind of lump the whole group of, you know, Pacific, you know, countries who come to the United States as Asian Americans, like they're all the same and the culture is all the same. As a non-Asian, can you tell me, Kenny Hsu, what is the difference among the cultures and why do they all seem to come here and have such great success?
Yeah, and I want to be clear. This is also a result of America being such a welcoming country for Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. You know, most countries do not have policies that, you know, give rise to the best talent they can come to this country and succeed, but America does. So Asian Americans have a lot to be thankful to Americans as well.
Absolutely.
But what we need to say here, and if, my book, An Inconvenient Minority, explains this pretty significantly. So if you're interested in these issues, go buy it. But what my book explains is that really, it comes from two things. One, a high commitment to education, right? And this is pretty universal among all of the Asian cultures that, you know, come to this country. An Asian American, on average, studies about twice as many hours a day as the average American. Twice as many. The average white person studies seven hours a week. The average Asian American studies about 13. The average Black American studies about 5. So Asian American, that disparity tends to breed disparate results. Secondly, it has to do with family values that Asian Americans tend to place. Higher two-parent family structures, lower rates of divorce, low rates of single parenthood, low rates of crime, low rates of drug use. That's the other part. Asian Americans tend to flock together, and since their cultures are predominantly, you know, well-lit and intact, and with intact families, they tend to reproduce those efforts in the education system. So Asian Americans in general benefit from those two traits.
That is so extraordinarily important for people to know. And I suspected as much because, you know, just studying a little bit, I suspected those were the answers. There is a commitment to education and there is a commitment to two-parent households where kids are raised correctly and they're raised with the right values and they're raised, yes, to study and make sure they do what they're supposed to do. Is there a rivalry among the Asian cultures when they come to the United States, or does everybody kind of just take pride in being, you know, from that particular region of the world and having Asian roots?
There's some rivalry, yeah, of course. But I'll tell you what, when they come to the U.S. and they're Americanized enough, the rivalry just basically dissipates. Chinese Americans and Japanese Americans get along a lot better than Chinese Chinese and Japanese Japanese for obvious reasons. That's the whole meaning of what the American experiment is, what the American dream. Your identity, yeah, you can have heritage, you can celebrate your country's heritage, but fundamentally, once you become naturalized in this country, once you start having kids in this country, they grow up through this country, they assimilate into American ideas, and part of the American ideal is the American dream. We don't treat you based on your background in this country. We treat you based on your merit, on your hard work. That's how you succeed in this country. That's what we are taught to believe. That's what I was taught to believe, and it's a good thing. And it's a good thing, man. Now, is there still things like caste discrimination among Indians in America? Yes, because caste and the caste system in India is so entrenched, has been so entrenched for such a long time. You can't just get rid of that in, 1-2 years, or even a generation or two. But I would say, on a large scale, predominantly Asian Americans are Americans first.
And that is an awesome thing to hear. Last question for you is not really about the educational aspect here and the main thrust of the TJ story and your book, An Inconvenient Minority. We look at China here in the United States with negativity because of the Chinese Communist Party. We look at what is being done with respect to child slave labor. We look at what is being done to, for example, with the concentration camps of the Uyghur Muslims. And, we look at Mao and we think about some of the worst things in the world when we think about China as a country. And yet the people there, especially those who are able to get out and come here, thrive. I don't like communism, but that country is thriving. They're thriving economically, and they're thriving educationally. How do we reconcile those things here from this side of the world? We look there, and again, we are very, very down on the idea of communist principles, and we certainly are down on the idea of some of the abuse and the human rights violations, that go on in China. But we look, and we got to say, whatever they're doing, as much as we don't like it, they're doing it well because they're succeeding. And again, educationally in record ways. Can you explain that in any way?
Yeah, and when I go and talk to Chinese American audiences, by the way, I do speak, and if you want to follow me or get me to an event in Ohio, I love Ohio, you can follow me at Kenny M. Hsu, and you can inquire there at Kenny M. Hsu at Twitter, M like Mary, so an XU is my last name. But when I talk to Chinese audiences specifically, they're a little sensitive about the China issue because they don't want America to turn xenophobic against Chinese Americans. And so, that is something that they have real concern about. But what I say is this, look, we have in America, we have the ability to make a distinction between the government of China, which has been established only for 60 years by the Communist Party and has not, has done very abusive things to its own country, and the glory of the Chinese culture that, has been around for millennia. And if you don't trust that Americans can learn to make that distinction, then you're basically not trusting in the greatness of this country. So I do trust in that. And maybe my trust will be tested, but I do trust in that. That being said, I think the reason why I have trust and confidence in that is because the Chinese American population in America has done many great things for this country. And I think people can see that. I think people can see that, they've done work, engineering, doctors, that kind of work. They've really accommodated to serving the community around them in healthcare, fixing your health, fixing your accounting, those kinds of places. They've chosen those professions because they are service-based professions. Yes, they compensate well, but they compensate well because that person is doing an essential service to their community. And I trust that people will understand that and find that out.
Terrific answer. It's a very loaded question. It's something that I'm sure you could do many presentations on, and I'm sure you already have. And so I certainly welcome the opportunity for people to check out more, learn more by buying your book, An Inconvenient Minority, and also follow Color Us United as well. Kenny Hsu is the president of Color Us United. You should check the book out. And I just followed you on Twitter as well, Kenny Hsu, so I appreciate the opportunity to do that so we can kind of keep in touch with what you're doing and bringing some very, very important information to all Americans anytime you get an opportunity. So we're glad to give that to you, and thank you so much this morning.
Always excited. Thank you.
Thank you. Kenny Hsu. On AM 1420, The Answer, some important information. It's 1026. We got a newscast coming up. We got Christina Hagen coming up. And we're still waiting to hear what's going on in Columbus at the State Central Committee as they look for a new Ohio Republican Party chairman to replace Bob Poduchik. How is it going? We'll see if we can check in with Shannon Burns or any of a number of other State Central Committee members who are down there. We're trying to get you the info on AM 1420.
Keeping you informed among the uninformed. Always Right Radio with Bob Franz on The Answer.
All right, onward we continue now at 10:37. Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer. Appreciate you being with us. Thanks to Kenny Hsu, talking about the TJ situation and the ongoing discrimination based on equity in America's schools, both lower and higher education. Let's get back now to the politicking going on in the state of Ohio and going on in the district. There was a steal. The Speaker steal of 23 is what Jack Windsor and I referred to it as on our show last night on our podcast, Talking Smack. The Speaker steal of 2023, and that's exactly what happened. Derek Maron was the Speaker-elect, a bunch of turncoat Republicans, and I'm sorry to phrase it that way. If it hurts your feelings, then consider what you did, not what I said. Turncoat Republicans took the speakership away from him and gave it to Jason Stevens with the help of 32 Democrats. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill in D.C., Kevin McCarthy has lost 11 consecutive votes now to rise from minority leader to speaker. Joining us now to analyze all of those things is our good friend, former Ohio State Representative. She knows her way around the statehouse. Now she sits on the Ohio Elections Commission. She can talk to us about that, too. Christina Hagen. Christina, good morning to you for the first time in 2023, which means I guess it's okay to say Happy New Year as well.
Good morning, Bob. And I think if I could go back in time, I would say that we were overly optimistic, unfortunately, about the things to be excited about in 2023, because obviously we watched those hopes and what we thought were secure forward motion options crash to the floor this past week. So it's a little disappointing. I'm still recovering here, Ibed, or at least mourning the loss of a great opportunity and potential for the conservative movement in the Ohio House of Representatives. But it's devastating to look at and to see that our people would pledge something and then immediately undermine and overturn their word, simply disturbing that that's where we are in Republican politics in Ohio.
That's a great way to open the discussion, Christina Hagen. And I want to follow it by the other element of this that is so disturbing. It's one thing for Republicans to turn on Republicans, to violate their own pledge and their own oath in their own caucus to say whoever wins our caucus vote here to be the speaker, we will all vote for unanimously when it comes to the time to vote for speaker. And Republican turning on a Republican is bad enough. But Republican to go to the Democrats to fortify their position and ultimately give them more power than they themselves have, that's something altogether different. Right now, 45 out of the 67 Republicans upheld their oath, and that is to vote for Derek Maron. 22 was not enough to beat 45 by my math, and so they had to go to get the Democrats on board. And the Democrats, 32 out of 33, were all compelled, for some reason, to do exactly what those 22 turncoat Republicans wanted them to do, and that is to vote for Jason Stevens as Speaker. And now it has come to pass. What does that tell you about those 22? That they're not only willing to turn on their own, but to literally go and line up with the enemy.
Yeah, it's shameful and, quite frankly, a little disappointing. You know, there were several that I saw on the list that I had high hopes for. As far as having conservative convictions and principles, and think about the Democrat Party, as messed up as their policies are, They would never do something like this to their own. In fact, even the squad in Congress is never successful at overthrowing Pelosi, the worst of all leaders in the history of mankind. Yet we've got, you know, a solid, convicted leader who is ready and prepared to serve and lead a caucus, hopefully a unified caucus. And this division occurred that allowed for the Democrats to have power in a red state. There's absolutely zero reason for it. Clearly, deals had to be struck to bring Democrats over to support a Republican speaker. And why are we wheeling and dealing with a minority that doesn't have the interests of the state at mind? It's simply upsetting on every front. And I can't even begin to imagine how deeply this will and has divided our caucus in Ohio, our Republican caucus. The working relationships that will be broken. I can't even imagine what it would be like to sit in a caucus meeting where you discuss trying to get policies passed when you're that deeply divided and you've turned on your own people. It's not a good situation.
We're talking to Christina Hagan, former Ohio State Representative, also now sitting on the Ohio Elections Commission, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, on the Joe Blystone verdict, or punishment, if you will, that was handed down. But I want to play a clip for you. Al Catrona was one of the 22 who supported Stevens and rallied and tried to turn others against the pledge made in the caucus in November for Derek Marin. I asked him directly what it is that they promised the Democrats in order to get them to come on board and help them get a more moderate rather than a more conservative speaker. This is what he said. They weren't supporting Jason Stevens at the behest of you and a bunch of other Republicans, or at least 21 of you. They weren't doing this because it's going to benefit Republicans. They're doing this because they're getting something for it. What are they getting? What deals were cut?
Well, see, that's the thing. There has been and there was not any deal. And so I know everybody kind of looked at that as suspect, like, well, why would they? I mean, I think, but the truth is, there was no deal.
Christina Hagan, no deal. They gave Democrats nothing. Democrats, out of the goodness of their own heart, said, we want to come and help those 22 Republicans who don't have enough to overturn the speaker that was chosen in their caucus. We just want to do this out of solidarity and bipartisanship. You buying that?
For the first time in my lifetime, they are operating in goodwill for the state as a whole and in a nonpartisan, nonpolitical way. I would like to know what deals were offered to these Republicans to flip their vote. I want to know. More importantly, we know the Democrats do this, but what happened to these Republicans? That's a better question that I think we should ask long term. And maybe we'll see in voting patterns, committee assignments, bills that are passed, and who those bills are in the interest of moving forward.
You know, I don't disagree on the Republican part, but I am much, much, much more concerned about what they promised the Democrats, because the Democrats are staunchly opposed to any restrictions on abortion. And now, are we talking about putting in play the 50% rather than the 60%, which Frank LaRose is pushing for to amend the Ohio Constitution? If it's only 50%, the Democrats are going to very easily get a ballot on the measure, or a referendum on the ballot, and be able to essentially codify abortion anytime on demand. There are a lot of bills that have been, you know, very controversial, whether they be the Save Women Sports Act or backpack bills. There's so many different things that Democrats had absolutely no power to stop because of the supermajority Republicans. Now they have given the Republicans and their new speaker what they wanted. What are they getting in return? I'm really worried about what they're going to sacrifice, what the Republicans are sacrificing to those 32 Democrats to get them to come over and cast their votes.
Yeah, we can only hope for the same consistency that we often see in candidates, and that is that what they promise, they do not deliver. And we just have to hope that is the case here, and there is some prayer that we can lean on that they will be able to unify the caucus and doing what's right on these matters, and maybe enough grassroots pressure. Maybe
think about how that sounds too, though, Christina. Think about how that sounds. Our only hope here is if the dishonest Republicans who turned on Derek Marin and their own caucus, where our only hope is that they will also now renege on promises that they have made to the Democrats in order to get their guy in. We're hoping they're doubly dishonest.
Trustworthiness is equally applied to all parties.
Wow.
If only we could count on the consistency of their inconsistency to be our only hope in this matter. I mean, that is the disappointing reality of where we are. We're praying that they do the right thing by defacting on what they said they would do with making a deal with the Democrats.
Right.
And it's not a hopeful endeavor.
It's pretty astounding. I want to move to the Ohio Elections Commission, upon which you sit, and I want to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday with the campaign finance decision on Joe Blystone. This has been something that we've talked about in the past. Obviously, Joe Blystone now apparently has to surrender $180,000. He has to admit to the violations that his campaign committed when he was running for governor, and he's not allowed to run again for any public office for 5 years. I think he got off very, very, very light, because I feel like this was not just accidental mistakes that we didn't report all of the contributions that we received. I don't think there was anything accidental or errors in accounting. I think this was intentional. I think it was a grift. I think he was never really intending to want to be the governor of the state of Ohio, knew he didn't have a real chance to do that, was probably being propped up by somebody who wanted to create division against Mike DeWine, in other words, to split votes from anybody who might legitimately challenge Mike DeWine. I feel like Joe Blystone got off very, very easy for his campaign finance violations. As a member of the Elections Commission, what say you?
Yeah, if you look at the reality and the magnitude of errors or violations committed, there could have been a much heavier fine weighed, absolutely. And I think, you know, the Secretary of State's office was then and reported that was just somewhere south of $600,000 worth of fines and violations. The parties, all of the attorneys' parties that were at hand immediately recessed upon getting together and came back with an abbreviated form of the hearing. And obviously, we extended the hearing for the purpose of being able to hear all of the facts of the case, and then were attacked as a corrupt commission for wanting to hear the facts of the case, which I always wonder, what is corrupt about transparency? Because that is my motto. That's why I seconded Commissioner Kreit's effort to go to a full hearing to hear the full extent of the case, and yet the legal teams were able to still guard from that transpiring. And again, I have no dog in this fight. I have no emotional attachment to any one of these gubernatorial candidates who were involved in this. I don't know Joe from Adam. And in this case, you know, you look at the facts of the matter, and yeah, it's pretty much a wash on campaign finances that were remaining. There is no additional pain to the individual that blatantly ignored campaign finance laws other than the prohibition to run for office for 5 years. So I think we've seen much more.
So no real financial penalty that he doesn't have to come out of pocket for his violations. He just has to surrender what's left.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, so it's, you know, some could say it's not substantial enough. It is the heaviest fine we have weighed as a commission in the history of the commission. However, it's not, you know, hitting a direct personal pocketbook by any means. So,
well, I know that's what Kurt Hartman, the attorney representing Mary Capella, said about this. The real disappointing aspect of this is that not a single dime comes out of his pocket. I mean, other than the fact that he could have used $180,000, which, again, I think he grifted anyway for his own personal use, because we obviously know he's not averse to committing violations. So he can't spend that in any manner that he chooses. That's going to have to be gone. But nothing out of pocket to actually punish him for very intentional violations. And that's the... that's a frustrating part of this. Christina, last question for you. Let's go to D.C. You're watching with great interest, like most American citizens, certainly like all American Republicans, at the speaker fight. 11 times Kevin McCarthy has come up short. The holdouts are very, very dug in on this, around 20 of them, now maybe 19 or 18. What do you see happening here? Kevin McCarthy, not only is he so unpopular that we're sitting here with the longest speaker's fight since 1859. But if he does eventually get these people to come on board, he is surrendering almost all of his power. According to the concessions he has been willing to give, there are very, very few things he's going to be able to do. And if he upsets even one Republican, they can make a motion to vacate and replace him as speaker, a motion to vote on that anyway. So what do you see happening here? Does Kevin McCarthy survive this eventually? And even if he does, You know, Matt Gaetz said he's going to be in the most constructive straitjacket that any speaker has ever been in. And if he gets out of line even a little bit, then they can dump him.
Yeah, and you know, people get worked up, and I love seeing politicians get up on screen and say, oh, this is just so embarrassing. It's such a waste of time. You know, we're not doing official business, as if they don't waste our time and our taxpayer funding all year long, every day of the week. So I'm personally appreciating at least the transparency of the distaste and the level of dishonesty and concern that exists in the House of Representatives. We could debate about how strong the strategy has been. I think, you know, there's a unified body that wants to see more conservative leadership, who wants to see respect for conservative mentality within the caucus in the country, a reflection of the will of voters across the country and the Republican Party. And they know that that is not under Kevin McCarthy's reign. But he's not handing over the power even after being voted against several times. And actually, it gives me a little bit of a flashback to the late Andy Thompson, who I nominated as a conservative. You know, we recognized that we probably did not have the votes in that space to get Andy elected as speaker, but we are there to stand on principle and to advocate and move people toward the right positions. And so this gives them the opportunity to have leverage for committees, for assignments, for the ability to maneuver him out if he's not acting in good faith to the convictions of our party. So I'm appreciating the extent of this historic debate over who should be speaker. I don't think there's any certainty in what happens next. And of course, at some point, you know, we do need to settle on moving forward. But I'll be interested to see how it all shakes out. You know, it seems like the hostile nature is going both ways. Threats have been made both ways. I think I heard Congresswoman Boebert say at some point that he had said to her, your district may elect you, but it is the conference that assigns you your committees. So it looks like the members aren't interested in that type of lording over, and they are reminding the Speaker of the House that it is the members that elect you, and it is they who assign you your power in that position. So this is where we need to be. Unfortunately, we saw the inverse of this in Ohio politics. So the conservatives got undercut by the minority of Republicans, and they went over with the Democrats. That would be the worst case scenario here, is if we saw some type of backing down and relationship forming with the Democrats in the United States House. However, I don't think that that is even possible in today's politics, because these Democrats would never survive having put a Republican at the mantle and then having to be primaried on any number of any policies, no matter how weak sauce they are, that were passed by a Republican majority. So I think we'll still have a Republican speaker. I'm not too concerned about that. But let's hope it's the best case scenario. Let's hope that we get an alternative than somebody that may just maybe be closer to being on our side.
Christina Hagan, former Ohio State Rep, current member of the Ohio Elections Commission, weighing in on everything we're watching right now, both in Columbus and in Washington, D.C. Christina, always a pleasure. Great conversation for the first time in 23. Look forward to next week. We'll see you then.
Thanks. God bless, Bob.
Thank you. God bless you as well. 10:54, quick timeout. Right back on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer. Well, 10:57, and no news. Does no news mean good news from the Ohio Republican, the State Central Committee choosing the new Ohio Republican Party chair? I don't know. We're still waiting. They started meeting at 9. The vote was supposed to happen at 10. It's now 11, just about. We're hoping to hear from somebody who is a part of this. Shannon Burns promised to let us know as soon as he knows anything. So we'll try to bring you some information in the next hour about that. The breaking news there, though, the important part of this, as Tom Zawistowski told me in the first hour of the broadcast this morning, is that Jimmy Stewart, who was Bob Poduchek's essentially hand-picked heir to the Ohio Republic or the ORP chair throne, or ORP chair, I guess we'll just call it, so we're not redundant, withdrew last night. He knew he was not going to have the votes needed, and so now the apparent favorite of those who were supporting Stewart for ORP chair are now supporting Alex Triantafylou down in Hamilton County. And the interesting part of that, according to what I've been told, is that he, being the party chair of Hamilton County, did a horrific job down there, specifically in the midterm elections. We're talking about somebody who oversaw the loss of a number of important positions in Hamilton County, including judgeships, including judicial seats. And so if he's not able to help shepherd enough votes for Republican candidates in Hamilton County, the question becomes is, why would you want to hand him the power to do this statewide, to be the statewide chairman? Yeah, here's what I have. I wanted to find this before I said it. He's the Hamilton County chair. He did not win. They did not win a single countywide race, the Republicans did, down in Hamilton County, which is more conservative. It's not like Hamilton County is Cuyahoga County. In what is a more Republican-ish conservative-type county in our state, didn't win a single countywide race and lost all of the judges to the Democrats. So would Alex Triantafylou be the right guy to lead the party? That's got a lot of people, scratching their heads, myself included. Brian Williams might be the best choice there, but he's locked in what is essentially a stalemate now with Triantafylou. So we're hoping we can get some information to share with you in hour number three. We'll take the newscast now. We'll come right back. We're going to talk to Larry Klayman as well. Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and Keeping Medicare Simple.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Hour number three underway now, 9 minutes past 11 o'clock. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, a free-for-all Friday, the sixth morning of the first month of the year of our Lord, 2023. You know, browsing and perusing Twitter during the breaks, it's probably not good for my mental health. I cannot tell you how many times I need to see the word insurrection before I just want to poke my eyes out. The left celebrating today as if it's a holiday. It's a bizarre thing. They try to blanket it or cloak it in sympathy and concern and compassion for Capitol Hill police officers. But the real goal is to continue to say it's been 2 years since the insurrection. Started by, incited by, planned by, carried out by the evil orange man bad Donald J. Trump. It's just pathetic. It really, really is. But it is January 6th. It is the two-year anniversary. And if we're going to focus on it at all, we shouldn't focus on the phony insurrection, which it never was. It did turn into a riot. There was violence. There was some vandalism. There was some theft. But that's not what this is all about. What we should focus our attention on now is anybody who is charged with anything and for 2 years have been denied their right, constitutional right to a speedy trial. People still languishing in jails and prisons, held sometimes in lockdown, secure housing unit, 23-hour lockdown facilities, isolation. Worse, according to many familiar with it than Guantanamo Bay. That is what we should be focusing on 2 years from the day of the January 6th riot or violence at what was supposed to be the the vote to officially approve, or I'm failing to find the word for whatever reason right now, but the 2020 presidential election, certify, the certification of the election. Now it came to me. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Right now, though, I want to pivot just a little bit and talk about somebody that nobody's talking about right now, and that's Donald J. Trump. Why? Well, it's interesting. Donald Trump is the only declared candidate for 2024. Nobody is paying attention to him right now, even in the aftermath of the release of his tax returns, which the Democrats knew was going to be their key to locking him up, proving that he is a tax cheat, he's committed fraud, and so on and so forth. And the problem is, as it turns out, is a great big nothing burger. Joining us to discuss is constitutional expert and legal analyst, the author of It Takes a Counter-Revolution, Wake Up America, the founder and former chairman of Judicial Watch, current chairman of Freedom Watch, Larry Klayman, back with us on AM 1420, The Answer. Larry, good morning. Good to have you aboard. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Good morning, Cleveland. I used to live in Cleveland for a while.
Yeah, I know. Last time we talked a little bit about that. So it's good to bring your voice back to the home folks here. So there's a lot going on in Cleveland, or particularly in Ohio. I guess it's most of it's emanating down in Columbus, and we'll talk about that in a moment if you'd like. But let's start out with what's going on in Washington, D.C. I want to ask you about the speaker's fight and see where you think that is going and whether or not you think this is good for the country or for the conservative movement or the Republican Party. Then we're going to talk a little bit about what the decision to release President Trump's tax returns means for everyday ordinary citizens. Start with Kevin McCarthy. Do you think he is going to end up pulling himself out of this or making more concessions and being the most hamstrung and hands-tied speaker in American history?
Well, I predict that by the time they're done, they'll probably cut a deal, unfortunately. But he will have his hands tied behind his back. He'll be worthless as a Speaker of the House. He wants it so bad, it's for his own personal aggrandizement. He says, I'm entitled to this. Well, you're not entitled to anything. The people decide who becomes Speaker of the House through their representatives. I think what's going on is great. It reminds me of the House of Commons in England. I mean, for the first time, we're hearing a little bit of truth coming out of Congress. We hear congressmen get up and say, this place is corrupt to the core. It cannot be run by establishment people. And this explains why Fox News, which is very establishment Republican, why they have Karl Rove on all the time. People like Rove, these consultants, have cut deals with McCarthy, funnel money to them, funnel business to them. This is what it's about. It's why they want him. And it's why CNN and MSNBC also want McCarthy, because they know that he's a feckless, worthless leader. They want the weakest person that they can get as Speaker of the House, someone who has no principles. So I like what's going on right now, but it is exemplary of why the people need to do it for themselves. The Republican Party is essentially dead. It could not even win in any major way an election in the worst period in American history. It's never been this bad in our entire existence of 230 some years. And it tells you something that we need new political parties. At Freedom Watch, you can go to freedomwatchusa.org. We have Third Continental Congress, our delegates are going to declare independence, form a new government with ethical people, with people who have principles. We're enforcing the rule of law ourselves with citizens' grand juries and citizens' trials peacefully and legally. We need to take control of our country as our founding fathers did in 1776. So I hope people will go to freedomwatchusa.org if I can put a little pitch in for ourselves. We need the resources. We need the tax-deductible contributions to get bigger, because you don't have a political party, the Republican Party, that represents us anymore. It just doesn't. It doesn't represent conservatives. And you can see it. You know, it's a handful of conservatives in Congress that are blocking McCarthy. The rest of them want to ram through this establishment hack. And McCarthy is so limited in his intellectual ability that during the Benghazi investigations years back of Hillary Clinton, he told the media, oh, we're only doing it for political purposes to wound Hillary Clinton. Now, what kind of an idiot would say that with a serious investigation, which was wound up being covered up anyway by the establishment Republicans in Congress when they controlled all three branches? Mm-hmm. So good riddance to McCarthy, but they probably will cut a deal in the end, I'm sorry to say.
Okay, if they didn't cut a deal, Larry Klayman, given everything you just said about Kevin McCarthy, you don't want them to, what's the alternative? Because Jim Jordan doesn't want it. Byron Donalds may or may not want it, but we know that his nomination comes with some controversy as well, being new. Who's if Kevin McCarthy stepped aside the way he did for Paul Ryan, who's he stepping aside for this time around?
There is nobody. That's the problem. There is nobody. There's no real leader in the Republican Party. And if I can use this to transition to President Trump,
okay,
is that the Republican Party is even stabbing President Trump in the back right now. They blame him for the losses in the midterm elections. They don't look in the mirror to look for the real reason. They don't stand for anything, that they're not principled, that when they had control of all three branches of government, they didn't balance the budget. They didn't reform Obamacare in any major way. They didn't give the American people the clarion call on the disaster in Afghanistan or what's happening in Ukraine. And the Republican Party, frankly, has just simply become a money-raising, racketeering enterprise to make money and to acquire power. And the people see that. Now, there are just a handful in Congress that actually want to do something. This representative from Pennsylvania, I forget his name right now, very articulate, and he's tough. Maybe him. Perry from Pennsylvania, from Harrisburg.
Yeah, member of the Freedom Caucus. Yeah.
Yeah, Scott I would Perry. Like to see him as Speaker of the House. There's a person who I think probably has some guts, but there are very few of them, less than a handful, and that's the problem.
Okay. Larry Klayman is the current chairman of Freedom Watch. He is also the author of It Takes a Counter-Revolution, Wake Up America. Let's talk about President Trump, and let's talk about those tax returns. Nobody has talked about it since the release because as much as the mainstream media tried to point out, he paid less percentage in taxes than, you know, teachers and maids and police officers and blah, blah, blah. As if he had done something wrong, as if he had done something illegal. That's the one thing that they couldn't say is that he broke any laws, because what he did do was use every loophole in the tax code to his benefit, which I would dare say every American would if they could. Nobody is going to voluntarily pay more taxes than they have to pay by the letter of the law in the tax code. He has the best accountants and the best tax attorneys in the world, and so he was able to, you know, to get away with paying very little. But none of it was illegal, which in essence made it a nothing burger. Is that why no one is talking about it anymore, Larry?
Well, in part, yeah, I think that's true. But they have other things they're going to use against him. It's clear. They will indict him for the sham that went on with regard to the documents at Mar-a-Lago. They don't care whether legally he was in the right or whether there's no basis to indict him. They want to do that because they fear that he would be a significant opponent in the 2024 presidential elections. And he probably will wind up getting indicted for January 6th, which is also complete BS, as we know. Because they fear
him. I welcome that in a court of law. I welcome that indictment. I hope he gets a chance because he did not have a chance to put on a defense in front of the January 6th Select Committee. They had nine prosecutors, seven Democrats and two Republicans, all of whom hated him, who spent a year and a half trying to pin the quote-unquote insurrection on him. He had no opportunity to defend himself, no cross-examination, no examination of evidence from experts, out-of-context video and audio. I hope they indict him for January 6th, because then he can put on a defense and he will destroy the entire thing in front of the world.
Well,
that's my opinion.
That would be an interesting show of defense. Here's the problem. As someone who's practiced in the most corrupt court in the United States, the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, there's not one judge there that has any degree of integrity, Democrat or Republican appointed. You get my new book, It Takes a Counter-Revolution, Wake Up America. Of the 20 worst judges I've ever appeared in front of the Federal Judicial Hall of Shame, about 17 from out that court, every single one. And he's going to be in
every
front
single
of
one of them appointed during the Obama era, right?
Well, a lot of them, but even the Trump people have turned on him. He didn't know who he was appointing. These Republican lobbyists put these names in front of him, rubber stamped. And how did they get there? Because, you know, they were paid off to put those names in front of him. And the problem is that you have, in the District of Columbia, it's ultra-leftist. You've got well over 90% of the people that vote Democrat. The jury will be a hanging jury. And just like they convicted the Oath Keepers, some of the Oath Keepers, and are about ready to convict the Proud Boys, who frankly did not commit sedition. They did not. President Trump will be in front of a hanging jury, and the Justice Department knows that. This Justice Department has become a Gestapo. It's little better than what we saw, frankly, and I hate to use this analogy, in Nazi Germany. It quells dissent. It locks people up because they disagree with you. You've got these judges on this court that are denying bail to January 6th protesters, is just one example, forcing them to get down on their knees and make forced confessions that they did something wrong when they feel they did nothing wrong. They're being put in prison, as you made a reference to, and being abused in prison. Some of them are even dying. You got judges putting people away that have cancer that were completely peaceful. This our justice system, I'm telling you, as a lawyer of 45 years, is the most corrupt system, profession in this country. And it is epitomized by the judges on the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia and its appellate court, the D.C. Circuit. They're all a bunch of political hacks with no exceptions. There are some good federal judges in this country, but they do not reside in Washington, D.C.
No, and that is a concern. There's no question about that. So to that end, let me ask you, there's an organization here in Northeast Ohio headed up by my good friend Tom Zawistowski, who was on with me in the first hour, the We the People Convention, sent a letter countersigned by, I want to say, a dozen and a half or so prominent conservatives in the state of Ohio, sent to Representative Jordan, who's going to be overseeing judiciary once this Congress finally gets in session. And he, of course, is pledged. This is why he doesn't want to be speaker. He wants to lead the fight and lead the investigations and the oversight of everything that has been done. And the letter by all the conservatives basically is asking Congressman Jordan and the Judiciary Committee to call the actual January 6th detainees who have been held now for 2 years with no trial to testify. Subpoena them to testify, not about their cases, because that wouldn't be allowed, but their treatment in this detention is absolutely valid. And so the call is for them to actually be able to testify and bring to light what is being done to them under, as you just described it, this horrific, corrupt criminal justice system. Do you think that can happen? And as an attorney, do you think it should happen?
It could happen, and they could also testify about their cases, if their lawyers would let them do that, assuming they have lawyers at this point.
Most of them are not allowed to talk to their lawyers. From what I'm learning from people close, they're not even allowed to have access to their own counsel, another constitutional violation.
Well, one of the problems with their lawyers is their lawyers are not exactly loyal to them, because they know the retaliation is that people, conservative lawyers in particular, have been subject to bar complaints in New York City and in Washington, D.C. They're scared to really stick their neck out. They're telling these January 6th defendants to plead out when they don't want to plead out. You know, they're part of the establishment too. That's the problem. It's not just judges, it's lawyers. But here's also the problem, is that Jim Jordan, you know, with his rolled up sleeves, I hate to say this, you know, because people like Jim Jordan, they think he's tough. It's mostly talk and no action. He has no ability to bring about justice. Who controls the Justice Department? Biden. A corrupt attorney general named Merrick Garland and a corrupt FBI director by the name of Christopher Wray. If he subpoenas anyone of substance that could gore the ox of the Democrats, those subpoenas can't be enforced, because who has to enforce them? The Justice Department. So this is a problem with the Republican Party. They're committing a fraud on the people to raise money. They can't do anything. It'll just be entertainment. That's all it is. We've seen entertainment for all these years. And this is why, in my book, to push that a little, because I want people to read it, I say we have the right, as Justice Scalia ruled in 1992 in the case United States versus Williams, to commission grand juries to try the guilty, to convict in citizens' courts, and to even mete out arrest, citizens' arrest. I advocate peacefully and legally. If we don't do that, this country will collapse under the weight of its own corruption. So this is why I want people to support Freedom Watch. Go to freedomwatchusa.org. We need so much more resources to do this. It's not going to happen for Congress. This will just be a dog and pony show with Jim Jordan with rolled up sleeves again. You know, he was real effective as the wrestling coach of Ohio State, but he can't do anything as the head of any committee on Capitol Hill. And that's the truth. It can just be a dog and pony show. That's it.
Well, I know that as the minority leader in those committees or on those committees like Judiciary, there was nothing he could do. As the chair, I would hope that he can do a heck of a lot more. And that's something that we're counting on. We're going to stay in constant contact with him. I have him on every week, and we talk about these things, and we're going to get in much more depth about that once we get this Congress started.
I think it's effective to get the point across. Yeah, I'm not knocking him in the sense that he doesn't say the right things. I'm just saying this. Don't tell the people that you can mete out justice, because you can't. You simply can't. Not with the Justice Department controlled.
No, I get that, and I don't think he's promising orange jumpsuits and ankle bracelets at all. I'm not saying that at all. Shackles, I guess I should call him. What he is promising, though, is to expose that which has been covered up for literally at least the last 6 years, going back to the beginning of the Trump administration.
But ask yourself this question. Ask yourself this question, though. We've exposed a lot over the last several years. You know, I founded Judicial Watch. We brought documents out. I run Freedom Watch today. It's all out there. You know, it's great.
But we've exposed the lie, Larry, only to the true believers, the ones who are going to go to your website, going to go to Freedom Watch, going to go to Judicial Watch. And what's going to happen if we do this before the Congress, I should say, before the entire country, mainstream media is going to have to cover the Congress.
Judicial Watch exposes documents, but what do you do with the documents? Okay. I get documents. I'm bringing hard hitting lawsuits. I'm bringing citizens' grand juries. The time for talk and entertainment is over. That's the subtitle of my book, Wake Up America Takes a Counter Revolution. Now's the time to act if you want to save this country. Enough talk, enough documents. Now is the time for the people to act. And that's why January 6th was not an insurrection. It was an uprising. And frankly, it was justified by and large. 99% peaceful protesters. And I'll tell you something. If Thomas Jefferson, who I dedicated my book to, had been alive, he would have been the first one in the Capitol on January 6th. It could have been violent, like storming the Bastille in France. We may be headed in that direction. I hope not. If we can head it off by taking peaceful and legal action, strong action, taking risks, not just having committee hearings
right,
to expose things, but to actually bring about justice. And that's something that Jim Jordan and the Republicans cannot do. So they should not tell the people they could do that, because that's not honest. They can't do it.
Well, they do have, they are going to have impeachment powers, and that includes not just presidents, but perhaps, as you brought up, attorneys general, people like Merrick Garland, who might be, you know, because you're right. That's the obstacle from a legal and criminal justice system standpoint. That's the obstacle, no question about it. But that is, again, something else they can address. They can't get it all done in 2 years. There's no question about that. If they can make some headway over the next 2 years and then turn things in 2024 with a new president appointing a new attorney general and a new justice system emerges, or Justice Department emerges, then maybe we have something we can work toward. Larry Klayman, a constitutional expert, get his book. It is important. It takes a counter-revolution. Wake up, America, and follow him on his website, which is
FreedomWatchUSA.org.
FreedomWatchUSA.org.
Thank you very much.
That's what I wanted to hear.
God
Thank
bless,
you, Larry.
Brother.
Appreciate it. All right, that's Larry Klayman. We took it to the news. We'll get to the news. We'll come back from the news. And we got time for a few more phone calls, and we'll try to give you an update from Columbus if we have one. Always Right Radio continues on AM 1420, The Answer.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by Keeping Medicare Simple and the Floor King.
Okay, 11:38, short segment here before we hand it over to Bill O to take you to the top of the hour at about 11:45. This is just something that's all kind of cool. I want to share this. I want to flex this a little bit because I love Hillsdale so much, and I love being a Hillsdale dad. I cannot believe it's been almost four full years since I told you my daughter was headed to Hillsdale. Now we're just a few months away from me saying my daughter just graduated from Hillsdale. Happens in May. It's crazy. But two of my favorite things are coming together in this story. One of them is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He's one of my favorite things. Hillsdale College is the other one of my favorite things. And here we have Florida Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has announced his plan to overhaul the ideological education system at the new College of Florida and restore its original mission. DeSantis will appoint six new members of NCF's Board of Trustees. The 13-member board now has enough members to reshape the public college's ideological courses and campus environment. Quote, as Governor DeSantis stated in his second inaugural speech, we must ensure that our institutions of higher learning are focused on academic excellence and the pursuit of truth. Starting today, the ship is turning around. New College of Florida, under the governor's new appointees, will be refocused on the founding mission of providing a world-class quality education with an exceptional focus on the classics. End quote. This from Brian Griffin, press secretary for Governor DeSantis. NCF currently lists among its values a, quote, just, diverse, equitable, and inclusive community, end quote, echoing the progressive ideology of diversity, equity, and inclusion, better known as critical race theory. The school is actively working toward eliminating outcome disparities for underrepresented and underserved groups, it says in its value sections. It is our hope that New College of Florida will become Florida's classical college more along the lines of a Hillsdale of the South, said James Uthmeyer, chief of staff for Ron DeSantis. In other words, DeSantis is going to smash DEI at this college. He is going to destroy this diversity and equity crap that they strive toward and actually strive toward real meritocracy-based education, wanting to create a Hillsdale of the South.
Can you dig it?
My only regret about my daughter attending Hillsdale is that everyone's daughter and son cannot attend Hillsdale. There's just not enough of them. There's only one. And if they're building one down in Florida committed to the same things, that is phenomenal. The school currently provides certain services like the Office of Inclusive Excellence, a gender study program, a gender and diversity center. It celebrates the Latinx History Month through films, workshops, concerts, and lectures, etc. The Office of Inclusive Excellence, the DEI office on campus, documents outcomes and learnings from phase one of the Inclusive Campus Climate Initiative. All of this progressive, woke, left-wing crap is on its way out the door. DeSantis promised to challenge the ideological education in his inaugural address on Tuesday, declaring, quote, we must ensure school systems are responsive to parents and to students, not partisan interest groups, and we must ensure that our institutions of higher learning are focused on academic excellence and the pursuit of truth, not the imposition of trendy ideology. Let's make this a Hillsdale of the South, Governor DeSantis. I absolutely love it. I love it enough to say it again.
Can you dig it?
That's a great sign for the folks in Florida, but hopefully at some point it'll be a great sign for the people all over this country, as maybe that is the next guy. And you know the kind of guy I mean. Sally's in Berea. Sally, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Bob. I hope we can offer some prayers but on this anniversary of January 6th for all those Trump supporters who have been persecuted and targeted by the Department of Injustice. You've outlined, and so has Julie Kelly, made a petition to help these families, the people incarcerated and others that have been unreasonably targeted in their homes.
Yeah.
Families have been in turmoil, and people's lives have been ruined. Their civil rights have been violated. And so my hope is that investigations can uncover some of the documents and videos that Nancy Pelosi and her gang have worked so hard to block and cover up, and so they can have some delayed justice. May God help them. Thank you, John. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Sally. I appreciate the phone call. And thank you for the great points. And I agree with the prayers. We do need them. John is in Chardon. John, go ahead. You're on the air, my friend.
Hi, Bob. Biden's not a duly elected president. He's a fraudulently elected president. And if you want the details on it, I refer you to a book written by Fox News contributor Molly Hemingway called Rigged. So it seems to me the Republicans need to put high on their agenda introduction of legislation that prevents this from happening again, or else it will happen again. I don't know about you and the other listeners, but I'm sick and tired about hearing the insults to the American people's intelligence put forth by the Biden people, the latest being blaming the border crisis on Republicans.
That is exactly what they're doing. You're right, my friend. Thank you, John, for the call, and I concur. And by the way, you don't have to wonder if it's going to happen again. It just did happen again in Arizona in the midterms. But you're right, and thanks so much for the tip on the book as well. That's all the time we've got for you today. Thanks for being a part of the show. Thanks to my team for doing an outstanding job all week in what has been a very busy week. We're going to see where we head over the weekend as far as the speaker's position. Join us again on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.